you look at what's happening today across the country, you're seeing, again, the first signs now of businesses starting to take some risk again, starting to invest again, and starting to add jobs back again.
You went into the kitchen cupboard, got yourself another hour, and you gave half of it to me. We sat there looking at the faces of the strangers in the pages till we knew mathematically.
They were in our... Hello, and welcome to NPR's Planet Money. I'm David Kestenbaum.
And I'm Caitlin Kenney. Today is Tuesday, February 9th. That was Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner you heard at the top. He was talking during an interview on Sunday on ABC's This Week. On the podcast today, David, you and I are going to be talking to an efficiency expert about how he shaves in the morning. But first, like always, we have our Planet Money indicator.
The indicator is 120%.
That's how much effort I put into work. How did you know? 120 every day, baby.
You're so lazy, Caitlin.
Yeah.
Don't you mean that is how much of your paycheck you spend on rent every month?
Yeah.
Because that would be closer to what we're talking about here. 120% is the projected size of Greece's national debt. Next year, the national debt of Greece is projected to reach over 120% of the country's gross domestic product, meaning if everyone in the country worked for an entire year, took nothing for themselves, and put all that toward repaying the country's debt,
they'd still end up short.
Yeah, 120% is huge. It is close to what the U.S. debt was after World War II, after we went into debt fighting this gigantic war. Greece wasn't even fighting a war. It's just the economy's just a mess. So everyone is asking, is Greece going to get bailed out? Who will do the bailing? And it's raising some really interesting questions about this whole unusual European Union thing where they have 16 governments and just one currency. So we'll get back to that on an upcoming podcast.
So today we have another installment of this series we've been doing with people who have unusual jobs that give you a real window into the economy. We don't have a name for it yet, so if anyone out there has a brilliant suggestion, please, please send it in. The person we're going to talk to today is named Matt LeBlanc, and he heard one of the podcasts we did with someone who had an unusual job. I think it was Mary Kinsley, the foreclosure lawyer. And he wrote in and said, listen, I have this job. It's pretty obscure. You probably really haven't heard of it, except for there is this one famous movie that it's in.
If someone asks me what I do for a living, I say, you ever seen the movie Office Space? And they go, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I'm the two Bobs.
So if you haven't seen Office Space, you really need to go out and rent it because it is just, I love it. I think it's such a funny movie. And in the movie, these characters, the two Bobs, are these efficiency experts. And they come into this software company where the main character works. And the main character is depressed. His life is like basically like a Dilbert cartoon every day. He has a million bosses and a million little annoying tasks to do. And then on top of it, these two efficiency experts come in, the two Bobs, and they're there to interrogate everyone about what they spend their day doing.
But you must be Peter Gibbons.
Uh-huh.
Terrific. I'm Bob Slidell. This is my associate, Bob Porter.
Hi, Bob. Bob?
Peter, why don't you go ahead and grab a seat and join us for a minute or two. You see, what we're actually trying to do here is we're trying to get a feel for how people spend their day at work. So, if you would you walk us through a typical day for you?
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. That way Lumber can't see me. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
Yeah. I just stare at my desk. But it looks like I'm working. I do that for probably another hour after lunch, too. I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
And Caitlin, this is actually a real job. It's called you're an efficiency expert or a lean expert. And our real efficiency expert, Matt LeBlanc, works for this giant global logistics company. And he basically tries to find all the little ways that people waste time or ways people don't do things in the most efficient way.
And David, you and I called him up and said, tell us a little bit more. This sounds really interesting. And it actually turns out his process is really scientific. He uses a stopwatch and does all these calculations. And he has this huge whiteboard where he's drawing out boxes and arrows. And when he wrote to us, he said, let me give you an example, something that's easy to understand. Imagine Adam Davidson, our own dear Adam of the Planet Money team, is working at Starbucks, and it's his job to make lattes all day long.
Let's say that Adam Davidson is making lattes and that I show up and I cycle time him and I go, listen, okay.
And when you I've say recorded, cycle time, you're just standing next to him with the stopwatch.
Yeah, I'm not hopefully not standing right next to him, but I am standing somewhere where I can see what he's doing. I'm standing there with a stopwatch and I'm recording the amount of time it takes. And then I say, okay, after about 10 to 20 observations of you just doing your job and making lattes, Adam, it says that you've done 100, it takes 124 seconds to do that latte. And he goes, okay, fine, that's fine. Now, you do 100 lattes each day. Now if I times 124 seconds times 100, and I get what is 124,000 seconds. Now, I divide that by 3,600, and I think I'm around about 3 to 4 hours it takes you. So I'm saying that it really, if you just did what the amount of average volume for that day, you'd only spend 4 hours working each day. But I spend 8 hours paying you. So there's these 4 hours in the day, and you'd essentially be 50% efficient.
You're saying, I know how many lattes you make in a day, but that's only 4 hours. Like, what do you do in the other 4 hours?
Yeah, and when I ask that question, that's when the yelling starts. Yeah, it's an honest thing because people don't usually think that way. People don't think in hours or they think in days. I show up, I do my job, I go home.
So, Caitlin, Matt he's kind of like a special ops guy, right? His company helps ship things all over the world and they're always trying to find ways to save money. So they just drop him at one of their locations and they say, okay, you got to find some way to save us $500,000, $500,000, and you got 8 weeks to do it. And when we talked to him, he'd just come back from this trip.
I was just in Mexico, and so for one of our clients there and one of our customers is that we ship MP3 players. You know, we distribute them throughout the entire Mexico City area. So, you know, I'm standing in the warehouse, and I'm looking at this process, and I have to spend a lot of time just standing in warehouses looking weird, staring at people moving boxes, and I see the truck back up, and they open the door, and they have to take all these boxes out, and then they move them. And then they pick them up and they put the box in one part. And then they go and they do something else and they'll come back and they'll pick the box up for no really apparent reason and just move it to another spot because they're working. They think they're working. And then finally they'll break it open, they'll count everything, and then they'll take all these iPods and they'll dump them out and then they'll touch them again. And then I go, okay, listen, guys. No, hold up. What if we try something? What if you pick up that box from the truck and you do the entire process from A to B until it gets into where it's supposed to be and you don't pick it up again? And they say, oh, you can't do that. I mean, there's all these things that you can't do that I'm always told, the things you can't do with these processes. And I go, listen, let's time it. You do it my way and it works, we'll do it. If it fails, then I will back off and I won't bother you anymore. So it's me and a whole bunch of warehouse workers with stopwatches, and we're timing people, and they're doing it again. And finally, it's, you know, midnight, and we finally get it to work, and it saves about half the time. And that was, you know, that's the good stuff about my job is you get to do that. And everyone, oh, you see that little light flick above their head, and they go, wow, I can't believe it actually worked. And I go, yeah, so why don't we do that with everything that we do?
So just so I understand, so they were taking the boxes out of the truck and they'd move them somewhere and then they'd take the truck away and they'd go to something else and then they say, okay, now we got to move the boxes over here. But you're saying every time you bend over, pick up the box and put it down, like that's wasted time, right? You want to pick it up and move it where you want it to be eventually.
Exactly. We actually call it waste. There are 8 types of waste that we talk about.
You've categorized
it. Wow.
The acronym is Tim T. Wood. It's transportation, inventory, motion, talent, waiting, overproduction, overprocessing, and defects.
Nice.
Caitlin, the amazing thing to me about this story is that Matt found a way he could save 50% of labor costs. 50%. I mean, it's incredible that there would be so much inefficiency out there still, right? I mean, it's a really competitive world, a really competitive economy. You would think that every company would be trying to tighten things up as much as possible, and yet there's still all this room for improvement.
And that's exactly where Matt comes in. That's the happy part of his job. So he gets to go in, watch people doing their jobs, and say, hey, if we change this, things will work better. And then it makes everyone's job easier. And then the best part is he gets to call his bosses and say, listen, if we do things this way, I'm going to save you hundreds of thousands of dollars, which they love. And sometimes the things that he suggests to make these changes are just really simple, basic things.
We also move a lot of printers. Like I'm sure you guys have printers in your office, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about why that printer is there and if it makes sense for it to be there?
Like in the specific location, you're saying?
In the specific location, if you have some people who have more stuff to print, do you move it closer to them? Like, this is the stuff that I have to think about. I have to go, listen, I can save you almost 2,000 hours worth of labor hours. If you take that printer from where it is over there and move it across this, you know, the room, you will save that many hours. And people never believe me, but you can show it with all sorts of different calculations.
Just the amount of time, like me walking across the room to get pieces of paper from the printer every day.
Exactly, because you're walking, it's transportation waste, and waste is time you could be doing more productive things.
Yeah, but you know what? I have my greatest ideas walking to the printer.
No, I mean, it's, you know, you say that, and now imagine that you actually did it, and when I move those printers, or I move people's desks to make them more efficient, I mean, that's when I start getting yelled at. That's when people start making physical threats. It's really bad.
Physical threats?
Yeah, I've been physically threatened in a meeting once by someone because I moved their desk from one side of the room to the other because they didn't like the fact that they couldn't see the window anymore.
Why'd you move his desk?
That was very young in my career, and I just walked in there, and I do this thing. It's, you know, it's this horrible term. It's called Gemba, when I just stand in one spot and I watch people doing their work for like an hour. I'll just watch. I'll see how it goes. And I just saw this guy get up and walk back and forth and back and forth. And I go, well, okay, I see that. And I just instantly, you know, all my, you know, neurons start firing. I'm like, transportation waste. I can move that guy. I did this, and I moved him over here. And then I just ran with it. And I went up to his managers, and I said, listen, I showed him the calculations I'd done. I said, listen, this is how much we can save if we do this.
And what did this guy say to you? What happened?
He said, I'm ruining everything. He said, I don't understand this. You know, these desks were set up for a reason, and you can't just come in here and move people's desks. And I mean, the sad thing is that I empathized with the guy. I'm like, imagine if someone came in, and I look like the Gerber baby. Like, imagine if the Gerber baby came in and told you to move your desk, and, you know, it didn't really explain it to you well enough or didn't sell it to you well enough and just made you do it. And that's probably the thing I've learned the most, is that you can't just move people's desks, you can't just move people's staplers. You have to bring them along, because if you don't, then you'll get physically threatened.
How did he physically threaten you?
He came after me, and his fellow employees had to stop him from killing me.
Jeez.
And you both work for the same company.
We both work for the same company, yeah.
And Caitlin, this is one reason why there are all these inefficiencies out there, right? It's that sometimes Matt's advice is hard to follow. It takes work to implement. So, you know, it requires people being really determined about changing the way they do things and sometimes changing the way they've done things for years.
And beyond just pissing people off by saying, hey, I'm going to move your desk, there's actually a dark side here, which is that in that movie that we talked about, Office Space, the two Bobs, the efficiency experts, they come in and they end up firing a bunch of people because they say, oh, we've actually determined that your job isn't that important. One of the main bosses in the movie, they realize he's just carrying one piece of paper from one side of the office to the other. So people do think about that when they hear Matt is coming. They worry that he's going to find something in his numbers and his calculations that means they're going to lose their job.
Matt says, okay, you know, what I do, it does give managers ammunition that they could use to get rid of workers. But from an economic point of view, that's actually good, right? Because if a company can do something more efficiently, that means the product they make is going to be cheaper for me to buy. And also means those workers can go on and do something that's actually really useful, and that would make the whole economy stronger. But yeah, it's got this dark side.
And Matt is optimistic about his work. He definitely thinks he adds value, and he makes some pretty decent points, one of which is that he says if he doesn't do this, the company is going to struggle. So at some point, they're going to have to fire people anyway. And without this information, they're going to fire the wrong people. There's people they're actually still going to need, and those people will end up getting fired along with everyone else.
Right. They won't know, like, who's necessary and who isn't, or what part of what they do is necessary. And he makes this other point, which is that, look, you don't have to fire people if you find out they can do their work in half the time, right? If you find Adam's got 4 hours not making lattes, you don't have to send him home. You could tell him to sit down and you could have him brainstorm ideas for making the process even more efficient. So maybe Adam would figure out he should keep the chocolate sprinkles right next to the milk steamer or whatever. But it does seem like at the end of the day, if you make things more efficient, you probably do need fewer people.
But as much as Matt finds people who are maybe there's extra time in their day, he also finds people who have all this hidden talent that isn't being taken advantage of. He told us a story of this one guy who worked at a company, and the guy had memorized these like 11-digit codes for every piece of cat and dog food in the building, which is kind of crazy. It was a photographic memory. But beyond that, he just really understood the process more than some of the current managers. He just knew where things were and how they went wrong. And he was just a temp at the time. So Matt was able to say to his bosses, hey, look, if you guys want to hire a supervisor, maybe this is your guy. You should give him another look. And so that was good for that specific employee. And then it's good for the company as a whole.
The thing about Matt's job that I think is a bit hard for him is that once you start seeing the world in this way, once you're professionally trained to look for inefficiencies, you realize that they're everywhere, that we live in this really messy, untidy world. And so when Matt's out, it makes him really happy just when he sees one little thing that's done well.
Have you ever been to Hooters?
I'm sad to say, yes, I have been to Hooters.
I have not. I've walked by. I can't even look in the window.
So you know that system where they attach like a little piece of paper to that zip line and they zip it to the cooks?
Yes.
And that's really efficient. I was at a restaurant with another Lean experts. We saw that and we said, that's kind of cool. And so the next assignment that she went on, she implemented that.
She stole it from Hooters.
She stole it from Hooters. I hope there isn't going to be any copyright on this. But yeah, she essentially stole the idea. And yeah, that's what you look for. There's little light bulbs come on. You have that little eye contact with the other Lean expert. Like, that's a really cool idea. We could steal that.
So you spend your day thinking about how to make things more efficient. Can you turn that off when the day ends and you go home? Or does cooking dinner become this kind of mechanical process that you can't stop thinking about how to make more efficient?
David, I gotta tell you, buddy, there's this thing called 5S. It's sort, straighten, sanitize, standardize, and sustain. Uh-huh. And that's essentially a workplace organization tool that we use to why you'd move your stapler a certain way.
Okay.
I 5S my toiletries in the morning. I have it's so bad. I have all of my toiletries are lined up in the order that I use them so that I have an order. It's a standardized process, and I follow that every single time I wake up. So I don't miss anything, and I do that. And here's the thing, though, is that I tell that story to people. Like, I say, listen, I am a nerd about this. I do this. And I tell them, listen, doing that is not important. I mean, that's not an important part of my day. It's like, if I can get that out of the way and I can do it in the most efficient way possible, I can get to the fun stuff more quickly. I can get to the, drinking coffee, talking with my friends. So, I mean, it sounds funny, but really, I've saved time in my life that I can do the things that are actually, value add and the things that I actually care about.
Yeah, but then you got to make the coffee in the most efficient way. You got to have the conversation in the most efficient way.
And then you got to tell people about it. And, like, if you move that coffee maker, a couple feet, you can save a lot of time, and they look at you like you're, you're deranged.
You said it's important to turn it off. How do you turn it off?
Music, hanging out with friends, heavy drinking.
That to me is the hard question. Not really how to be efficient. It's how to stop thinking about being efficient.
Hey, David, since you think it would be really hard to turn all that efficiency mindset off, do you have any weird tics or anything like that you want to tell us about?
What do you mean?
You remember you were telling me that story about when you were younger and you would mow the lawn and you were always thinking, okay, do I make the U-turn here? Should I go straight or diagonal?
Yeah, when I had to mow the lawn, I was always trying to figure out if it made more sense to like mow a straight line and then do a U-turn and come back and another U-turn, or if it was better to do a kind of box and spiral inward.
Guys can't see this, but as David's talking, he's literally drawing it out for me with the pen.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe you and Matt have a lot more in common than you realize.
Yep.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us here today. Keep sending us your stories about jobs you may have that give you this little weird window into the economy. We really love them. You can email them to us at planetmoney@npr.org.
And stop by the blog, npr.org/money, to hear more from Hannah and Adam about their trip to Haiti. I'm David Kestenbaum.
And I'm Caitlin Kenny. Thanks for listening.
We counted up our feelings and divided them up.